Hello, and welcome to Why Wars Happened,
a weekly podcast where we talk about what led to war in history. I'm your host, Emily Ross, and today we're going to be discussing the things that led to the American Revolution, with a focus on Virginia this season.
Okay, so where we left off in the last episode was that the people of Virginia had been dealing with the natives who had been stealing from their farms and murdering the families inside. A tribe called the Susquehannock had been forced out of their land in Maryland by an enemy tribe, and when they resettled closer to Virginia, they had done so right on the edge of some of the towns. The place they had settled didn't have enough space to grow or hunt food, so they started stealing from the farms of the colonists. The murders of the people inside the farms began soon after that. This became a well-known thing among the Virginia colonists. When a man was found murdered on his doorstep one morning, the people had had enough. Small groups of citizens headed out to chase down the murderers. They found those whom they believed to be guilty. A battle broke out, and some of the natives who were killed were the Susquehannock, who were, at the time, a friendly tribe of the colonists. Even though the Susquehannock were a friendly tribe, it does seem that they had at least some part in the murders.
The tribe's members were literally wearing the clothes of the murder victims, and their canoes had been seen loaded with food from the colonists' farms. So, they were guilty.
Some of the people the colonists killed in this battle were probably innocent. Either way, this caused the Susquehannock to end the friendship with the colony, and they began a series of murderous raids on the colonists. So now you have the Englishmen who had slaughtered innocent people, and like the Englishmen, the Susquehannock were filled with rage and wouldn't let this stand. And like the Englishmen, they retaliated. They began their own series of attacks on further innocent people up and down the farms of Virginia. But, unlike the Englishmen, these attacks on innocent victims were deliberate, intentional, and caused the already bubbling tensions to come to a boiling point. The Susquehannock joined other native tribes that hated the English, and together they murdered entire families around the colony in a series of slaughters that lasted for months. In the first few days, the native raiders had killed 60 people, including children. Some of their victims had been kept alive, only to be brought back as prisoners to the native villages, where they suffered unimaginable tortures. Some were burned alive, some had their nails ripped out of their fingers, and some of the colonists had their guts sliced open and were made to run around a tree in circles until they died an agonizing death. Other tortures awaited them that could barely be imagined. The terrified Virginia citizens fled from their homes, leaving everything behind in search of a more populated town where they were more likely to be protected. Others joined larger farms and put up protective walls around them. Governor Berkeley knew that the relationship between the Virginia citizens and the natives was his responsibility. If issues came up between the colonists and the tribes, everyone would be looking to him to solve it. Even so, he didn't act on these attacks right away. And here's where the trouble begins for him. Governor Berkeley said that the colony should wait until the assembly could get together and decide what to do. Seems reasonable. The people would be able to voice their opinions about what was to be done in response to the attacks. But remember that Berkeley controlled the assembly. They would do whatever he wanted them to do. There wasn't much point in waiting. Plus, there might be another attack before then. Even so, Governor Berkeley did wait. He called the assembly together, and seeing as they lived so far away from each other, it took several weeks for them all to meet up. When the assembly was all nice and gathered, Governor Berkeley told them that war should be declared on the tribes who had been attacking them. The assembly agreed, and the governor proceeded to have 500 men with horses assemble to go out against the natives. At the head of this 500-man army was a man well experienced in battle. His name was Henry Chicheley. Yes, the same Henry Chicheley that would become governor of Virginia. We'll get to that later. For now, Chicheley was in front of the 500-man army and their horses, and they were all ready to go. But, for some unknown reason, Governor Berkeley came out and told them to stop. Never mind, everyone go home. We're not attacking any natives. This has baffled historians for centuries. While we don't know an exact reason, we can piece together some of the possible explanations for this sudden change of plan. One reason is that he may have been worried that the men wouldn't be able to tell the difference between friendly and unfriendly natives. If this 500-man army attacked a friendly tribe, the entire situation could spiral into something far worse than it already was. Another possible reason was in the letters he had written to England. In the letters, he had stated that he was worried there might be a rebellion among Virginia's population. The people were unhappy with his lack of leadership in the situation, and the people serving in Virginia's military might mutiny against orders they didn't like. A third reason might be that Governor Berkeley owned most of the beaver hunting lands in Virginia. Owning beaver land was the tops of what any landowner or businessman could hope to participate in. Berkeley was extremely wealthy, and part of his wealth came from these beaver lands. Hunters paid him permission to hunt on his land. Any war would scare away not only the beavers in the area, but also the beaver hunters. This would mean less people paying him money each month. At one point, it was said that Governor Berkeley was determined that, quote, no bullets would pierce beaver skins. A fourth, more compelling reason was that there was a friendly tribe in the area known as the Paw Monkeys. Berkeley had plans to use them as spies and allies in the war. If soldiers marched out in the area, they might attack the Paw Monkeys or scare them off, and he didn't want to risk this. Whatever the reason, or reasons, he called the whole thing off and declared that all the people needed to protect themselves were the forts that had been built around the towns and rivers. In a previous episode, we discussed how these forts were usually nothing more than dirt and mud. They were often so poorly built that they would sometimes crumble before they could even be used. The people had been paying excessively high taxes to build them and had accused the assembly members of keeping a lot of the money for themselves, and only paying for poor materials and poor work to complete them. This had caused enormous tension between the people and the government. On top of that, the forts hadn't done much to protect them during the Dutch Wars. The people knew that the forts might as well be made out of paper. But here was their governor telling them, "Hey, remember those totally useless buildings you guys paid for? Why doesn't everyone just use those?" He was leaving the people completely unprotected. The natives slipped in between the forts and committed atrocities in the towns inside. They burned, murdered, and plundered wherever they went. Some were kept alive and led off to be tortured to death. It even seemed that the town's very inability to defend themselves emboldened the natives and increased the attacks. More murders were happening than ever before. The people cried out that if the governor wouldn't send a force of men to stop the attacks, the townsfolk themselves would go out and do it. Some proclaimed that they would no longer plant tobacco.
Tobacco was used to pay taxes, and the taxes were going towards building and maintaining these terrible forts.
If they didn't grow tobacco, the government wouldn't have the money for the forts. To this, the governor said that if anyone stopped growing tobacco to avoid paying taxes, he would send men to their houses to confiscate their beds and cows to pay for it. From all around the colony, the people cried out for protection. They asked the governor to forget the forts and send out a large body of men to stop these attacks. Letter after letter flooded into the governor's office begging him for help. They said that the people themselves had the weapons and the readiness to go out and find the murderers. They declared themselves as the governor's subjects, so all they needed was his permission. But the governor refused them. He went a step further and called them fools and told them that they weren't his subjects, they were the king's subjects. He cursed them by saying, "A pox take you," and forbade them from ever asking him for this permission again. Anyone who did ask for this permission would be punished. Their own government was so hostile to them, and their own lives were at such risk that the only thing to be done was to rise up in their own defense. At this precise time, a group of natives had been spotted off the shores of the James River. The closest town was Charles City, and the people in Charles City began to arm themselves in panic in preparation for another brutal attack. Groups of men dashed from place to place, beating the drum of war and gathering up volunteers. Soon, a large body of men had gathered in the town. They had weapons. They had determination. All they needed was a leader. This they found in Nathaniel Bacon. Nathaniel Bacon was a young man, now in his early 30s, Even though he was young, he was still looked up to as a member of the upper-class society. He was a member of the Governor's Council. He was distantly related to the governor, and he was well-educated. Bacon had been renting land from Governor Berkeley in order to hunt beavers. Because of the blood relation, being on the council, and paying the governor money every month, Nathaniel Bacon was friendly with the governor. Perhaps the governor would listen to him. Perhaps Bacon's education gave him knowledge on how to do battle. But, most importantly, Bacon was a great speaker. He captured the attention of anyone who listened, and he was very easily able to persuade people to do things. On top of all of that, he had a personal reason for fighting this fight. The natives had attacked his home in Virginia, plundered his belongings, and murdered the man whom Bacon had been working for. Bacon himself was furious with the governor's inaction on defending the people from attack. He was the perfect leader. Some of his friends had suggested him as the leader, and the rebel army was willing to have him. But Bacon was not so ready to accept the position. Even so, his friends convinced him to row across the river and meet up with the rebel army. Bacon agreed, and off they went to Charles City. When they got there, the men cried out in celebration, "A Bacon! A Bacon! A Bacon!" and declared him as their leader. Bacon could hardly resist. As he stood before them, he denounced the government as nothing more than a bunch of negligent traitors, incapable of performing the office which they serve. He instantly became the people's hero and was seen as the only person who could save their lives and their fortunes. Bacon promised that if the governor ordered them to disband, they would march out anyways. The men drank to the damnation of their souls and gathered around him in a huge circle. One by one, each of them took an oath of loyalty. Bacon's rebellion had officially begun. In the newly formed army, their first action was to march 6 hours away to the town of New Kent. Before they left, Bacon wrote to Governor Berkeley informing him of what was happening. In the letter, he assured the governor that they were only acting in self-defense and for the country's safety. He had no intentions of overthrowing the governor, and he even enclosed a payment of money that he owed to Governor Berkeley. He sent the letter off, and without waiting for a reply, he marched towards New Kent with his rebel army behind him. When they got there, they found that the people in New Kent were ripe for rebellion and ready to join their army. Together, the men of Charles City and New Kent headed out to find the murderers. When Governor Berkeley received the news of these actions, he was furious. Only the governor could send people to battle, and only the governor could declare when and where it would happen. This was a clear act of mutiny. On top of that, remember the friendly tribe, the Pamunkeys, that Governor Berkeley wanted to use as allies and spies in the war with the natives? Well, as Bacon and his men marched to New Kent, they crossed right into Pamunkey territory. The Pamunkeys had seen the approaching army and had fled in fear. Now they were nowhere to be found, and if they were found, they would be less likely to help them in the war. Governor Berkeley couldn't let this stand. He had to respond with appropriate force to stop the rebellion before it spread to other parts of the colony. That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Join us next week when we discuss how the governor was finally able to stop the rebel army, only temporarily, and how he was forced to hold new elections in the assembly. See you next time on Why Wars Happened.